Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this, I'll tell you about my heartache. I'll tell you about my heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
And welcome to a slightly delayed beginning of Soma Time. I am your host, Mark Filippi, and we are going to be Soma casting a tie hockey game as the Rangers have just blown a two-goal lead here in the third period. Have just tied the game at three. Let's see what's going on at Citi Field because I'm disgusted with this team. Absolutely disgusted. If they have any kind of luck, it's bad, and it's just the Rangers, you know. The Mets are still up 2-1 as Oli Perez ecos off the field. Looks like we got six innings complete on Jackie Robinson night. So we'll be having a little agita here as the third period winds down as the Rangers again prove that hockey games are just about 20 minutes too long for them. It lasted about 2 minutes into the third period with a 3-2 lead. They took a 3-1 lead actually with. With about a minute and a half to go in the second period, you start feeling pretty good. They had put up an incredible resistance to the relentless assault of the crazy Russians here on the Caps. And the Caps got a gimme goal with about 45 seconds left in the second. And then they get a little Ginnip-Ginnop goal here, bopping it around in the crease to start the period. So the Rangers are in full Foldo formation here. Blowing the lead. If they get down by a goal, basically that's it. They won't even get the puck across the center ice. But they've been plucky. They've been plucky. And we'll see if we can scratch out a goal here while we're on the air and try and steal game one back after we had really stolen it and now we've given it back to the Caps. But they really have been just pounding the Rangers all night long, and wasn't for the Anto in the net there, we'd be losing already. So. Anyway, 646-478-4847 is our number, and we have a Canadian guest tonight, so hopefully we'll get a little hockey talk going. As the Rangers, about a minute after this, they seem to be putting on some pressure. We'll go live here for a couple of minutes since I get the DM switchboard up. As usual, my computer had an aneurysm about 3 minutes before the show started. So, par for the course. If you've been a fan of the show or an accidental listener, the technical glitch is actually sort of like a sidekick. And anyone that has ever done a Blog Talk Radio show is aware of the many gremlins in this great platform that we have here for free. And the very little help that you actually get when it happens. It's an on-the-job training for a job you get to do for nothing. And so is the help. You figure it out for yourself. It's pretty much trial and lots of error. And hopefully the switchboard will come up so I can bop in the guest here in a minute. Otherwise, there'll be the big reboot, which is always fun to do during a show, which will do that and stay on the air. So there might be some fun here in the archive. You guys are listening to the first 5 minutes of the show here. Or I'll be switching to Firefox because it's one of the disadvantages of having to do the show solamente is that you have no backup plan when things go wrong. You pretty much eat it, and the audience suffers. They lose their entertainment. So, but anyway, again, the number here is 646-478-4847. I can't punch you in just yet, but if you're there, I will find you, and we'll see what happens. You know, this is just not happening. I'm doing this as I'm talking to you because it's sort of a nice second job I have of trying to deal with a computer that hates me. Let's see if we can get any kind of traction here. All right, we are back. Switchboard, trying, and it's doing its damnedest to not pop up. All right, we'll wait. So anyway, Rangers, we've got about just under 15 minutes to go. down in Maryland there at I affectionately call it the Cap Center, is what it used to be. Not sure what they renamed it corporately now, but the Russians are on the beach and attacking the Rangers, and the Rangers are in full retreat. This is let's get a couple minutes of that in. You can taste some of the hockey stress that I'm under. Looks like it's going to be a face-off right as soon as I turn it on here, though. Let's see. Rangers are four-checking. All right. Get a little flavor. This is something that we do every spring. Watch the Rangers fade. I can't believe this thing still hasn't popped up. It is really defying all logic. Look at this. Everything I open up, it won't open up the switchboard. It's a conspiracy. All right, we're going to bail out and see if we can get this thing over on the other side. I've done this show so long, and it just finds another way to screw you. It's the Kama Sutra of technical gaffes. How many ways can I make this man sick to his stomach? So if you have called tonight, one of the rare times we do get a caller in the beginning of the show, you know, God bless you. You're on hold. And just dodging bullets while I'm dodging bullets. At least I got on the air. That's usually half the battle. Unbelievable. Oh, I should have rebooted. Slowly I turn. The whole game is being played in the Rangers' end here as we watch. 13 minutes until the hammer drops. And we go to overtime, sudden death. Wouldn't it be good? A sudden death somacast. Well, I can't get on the switchboard. All right, we're going the old Control-Alt-Delete here. Let's see if we can do that. And we're in a commercial in the Ranger game, so. It says everything is running. Well, of course it does. Yeah, it's running all right. Running me into the ground. What is this thing doing? All right, I got out enough to go to Mozilla. Maybe Mozilla can save me here. Before the guest comes on in a minute and wonders what the heck happened to me. And we are loaded with all kinds of spyware tonight. And the computer that loves to hate me.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Just letting you know that I will man the switchboard for you.
Oh, if I have to reboot?
Yeah.
Is the guest there yet?
No.
Okay, well, that's good news.
Yes.
I'm just trying to get this thing to work.
Took me five calls to get in.
Hello.
Five calls to get into what?
Into Blog Talk.
What, it wouldn't let you in the system?
Yes.
Oh, so it isn't me.
Probably not, but I do have the switchboard up, so I will handle that from this end.
I've got the old hourglass going here.
Yeah, of course you do.
Of course I do, yeah. Well, mm-hmm. They've learned not to care because, you know, that only makes it worse.
Yes.
The law of attraction, people, in action here. Right now there's some woo going, I really like the show to clock up more. And oh, look, it made it happen. Yeah. It's my intent mm-hmm. again. Intentamente. Now we're watching Firefox load from...
Well, I guess you weren't thinking, you know, positive thoughts. So.
Right, right. All the, And all the children with hemophilia do the same thing. They
yep.
Unbelievable. All right, let's see. We're going over here. Make sure I got the sound down. I don't know if I've ever really run the show out of... Mozilla. I guess it'll work.
Well, that's what I always run it out of.
All right. Well, let's see if I get the thing to fire up a nice switchboard for me so I can operate. The Rangers are really going to just give me a golf club tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, let me sign in you. Oh, man. All right. Is he there yet?
No.
Okay.
Are we there yet?
Yeah, right. Are we there yet? All right. 6-9. And in. No, remember the site. Just Firefox, I'm not talking to you.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no, we got penalties given out in the Ranger game now. Sean Avery. That guy gets a penalty if he skates near somebody. He gets shoved. He gets shoved twice. Two guys gang up on him. And then what? He gets the penalty. All right, let's see. My account, switchboard. Come on. Ooh, looking good. And I'm in. Wow.
All right.
And, of course, the lovely and talented, ridiculous Internet Explorer is still grabbing for its...
Yeah, well, I don't use IE. I find it to be obnoxious.
This is the new 8.0. Eight versions of the same program, and it still doesn't work.
No.
Yeah, sounds like us with the show. Eight versions of the show, it still doesn't work.
No comment.
That's right. All right, I'm up. I guess if you can keep an ear out, I'll just mute your thing. And if I lose it, then of course you have to call back in. So I guess you can hang up.
All righty. Well, if you have any problems, I'll probably hear it, and I'll try to pop in and get the guy up there for you.
Thank you, technical support.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling tech support, and have a nice evening.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, Professor Val, checking in from her air desk. So here we are, 9:12 on an Eco Wednesday. And as I said, the Rangers are embroiled in a 3-3 hockey game here with the Russian from hell, Alexander Ovechkin, who I really would like to take a shovel to his face. I just don't like the look of him. I don't like anything about him. And they're all these long, gangly guys on the Caps. Very Anto, very kind of like woodpecker-looking faces, you know, just like annoying guys that are going to get a lot of stupid lucky goals because they hack and hack like a bunch of hungry hippos around the net. And all we have is our lone Anto there in the net there. Look at this. Give him another shot. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, there's another guy. Looks like a basketball player on skates. Oh, nice save. So it's going to be basically the goalie, Lundqvist, for the Rangers, pretty much trying to hold off about 10 Russians until the Rangers can scratch out a goal, maybe. Look at this. They're hacking at his arms. See, being a goalie for 12 years or whatever I played hockey for, you just know that certain teams, they're just cumbersome. You know, they come at you with everything, skates, blades, sticks, everything's coming at you, snow in the face, and it just gets you annoyed. So, anyway, our guest should be calling in any minute, at least that's what I thought. He seemed enthusiastic yesterday, and we'll be looking at some ways to transfer the somatic paradigm to you, the listener, because somebody's out there doing it better than me, obviously, and we'll see if he can help us out here a little bit, because I have certain questions about that. And other than that, let's see. We'll take a peek at the Met game here, because I'm getting a little nauseous watching the Rangers go back and forth. And maybe when our caller calls in, we will go to that angle. So let's see. Mets trying to get their first win in Citi Field tonight. They actually have the lead here as they come to bat here in the sixth inning. Sorry. Top of the seventh, we're already out. And there's already two out in the seventh. How about that? So the Padres are living up to their billing. They're not supposed to be that good, but they're off to a 5-2 start, I guess. All right. So there I see our caller is there. What the heck did that happen? That never happens at all. Oh, okay. All right. So we're going to get our guest on here. And on the phone with us now from somewhere in Canada, and I'm going to definitely butcher his name. My best attempt here is Matthew van der Giezen. Did I get close, Matt?
You're doing really well, Mark.
Thank you. All right, so you join us here on Summertime. I don't know how the submarine, was that you, Al? Okay. So she's still on the switchboard somehow. Val's offline. She's just helping us out. We had some technical stuff going on before, but... I think we got it corrected anyway. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us here, because we very rarely get someone on our side of the coin. And tonight, with like I had said in the preview, if you're not familiar with Matthew's work, he's with a center up there called Healing Connections, and it's him and a whole bunch of other guys and girls up there working, and he's sort of putting the learning curve of coming into rhythm with what somatics is really about, sort of in Macy's window, to use a New York phrase, to watch people adopt this sort of untold story. Because you never really get told the somatic story until you're either pretty old, or you're coming to a choreography or a dance kind of a lifestyle, something like that. It's under the rocks. And I just got back from a trip out there to the Denver Boulder area, and there's a lot of, they call it Soma Valley up there towards Boulder, and none of those schools talk to each other. None of those schools share information very readily. So it's beyond esoteric. It's basically handed down practitioner to practitioner, very slowly. So hopefully we can see how they're accelerating the process up there in Canada. So just as a way of introducing yourself, how did you get into the Soma universe to initiate this process?
Well, Mark, I started as a massage therapist in the whole bodywork field. And
okay.
So it's a very sort of pragmatic, hands-on, you get results or you don't kind of thing. And one of the things that made me curious right from the beginning of my work was that sometimes people would come and I would be, a genius, and the next time they come, it didn't work, and I couldn't figure out why. And it certainly wasn't being explained on the basis of the techniques. And for me, that started really a 25-year journey in trying to understand what it is that makes this interactive organism experience that we call the body, what really makes it work. And and so along that way, I've learned from, a lot of different wonderful sources, people who have been out there, doing the lonely work, as you described early. And I think we're just actually reaching a time now where some of those different journeys are starting to intersect with each other, and the language is starting to get out there more and more.
Mm-hmm. Well, just as you say that, we have a cause for celebration. We're Soma casting a hockey game here, so...
I have a hard time listening to this, and I'll tell you why. I'm calling from the home of the Edmonton Oilers, Edmonton.
Oh, really?
Our guys are getting ready to go golfing, and this is very painful.
You guys aren't in the playoffs. Okay, that's right, yeah. Well, I guess, did you guys still have that heated rivalry with Calgary down the road there? Is it still like the old Oilers in the 80s had a really hard time with Calgary Flames in a lot of these early playoff series? You probably grew up, watching the Gretzky and Messier, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see? Oh, yeah. See, there's the Canadian. Oh, yeah. I was waiting for the first one of those. So, you can't like this Capital team with this crazy Russian. I just can't stand watching him. He had 6 shots on goal in the first period and 6 bone-crushing checks at the same time. So it's like enough already. I mean, it's almost like watching like Lemieux when he was young. He did everything, He was a big galoof, and the puck was taped to his stick, and he would hit everybody. So he spent half his career, it was like watching, like I said before, it's like watching a basketball player on skates. But the Rangers have been outshot probably 2-1 tonight on the order of 40-20, and they have a lead with about 6 minutes to go. So we're all poised for the big Ranger heart-wrenching ending here. So at least they got up a goal before they pulled the rug out from under me. So I'm just keeping an eye on that, because we do SomaCast on Wednesday nights when there's a game, because part of the things, like you were saying, getting involved with somatics is getting into the interior of the anatomy and physiology that everybody learns in school from the outside, from the third-person point of view. Somatics is being a first-person science. It's more visceral. It's more alive. It's more untamable. It's more human to me. And when you see people coming in contact with it, there's an initial sort of like, whoa, like a resistance to it, because it sort of opens you up and reveals things about you to yourself that are somewhat primitive, biological. Like you'll notice, like a massage, there's a lot of somatic recall that goes on even when you're learning, even when you're just learning with each other in school, in class. And memories will come up, little flashbacks, things like that, while you're on the table or even while you're rendering care. And you're sharing that energy field with the client, and invariably the client will laugh, cry, all these involuntary things will happen. And there never was any attention paid to that during the sort of the vocational part of learning how to do the procedure. It was almost like that was like dismissed and almost incidental and off to the side. But in somatics, that stuff is what's front and center. That's the juice. So how do you make the transition from the mechanical process? We had Stephen Levin talking about biotensegrity a couple weeks ago, and made it very structural and very sort of like, almost kind of stoic. How do you handle that dynamic when you're learning something that's left brain procedural, put your feet here, put your hands there, stand like this, and all of a sudden you're paying attention to things that are much more, you know, interactive and dynamic. How do you make that shift in your attention?
Well, you know, a very good example is the hockey game. You know, if anybody who is listening to this program, whether they're, you know, have the hockey game in one ear or could care
mm-hmm.
less, were to check into any place where their body contacts a surface in
okay.
that moment, you know, where your butt's in the chair, your feet on the floor, your back, and you just say, how do I know it's there? Where are the sensations that tell me that that surface even exists? And
mm-hmm.
we'll find, each of us will find a varying degree of connection with that. Sometimes we'll be surprised to find that we can hardly even tell where it is. We just kind of know it sort of secondhand. And other times you'll get it much more, much clearer. And it tells you already something about where you are in this moment in your space. And what we know is that when you do that, people, each of us, will start to also notice that our body starts to make a shift. Sometimes it's very obvious where you'll say, oh my God, I feel really uncomfortable here and I need to kind of, you know, shift my butt across, or my feet need to come onto the ground more. And sometimes it's more subtle. Your
mm-hmm.
back will straighten up, or, you know. But that change of bringing awareness to sensation and then noticing that your body starts to reorganize is the beginning of that movement. You talked in your introductory piece on the internet about turning the mirror around, and really in a very important way, it's turning the mirror around in the sense that we walk through the looking glass, and instead of having it reflected back at us, we sort of enter that world that we're always bouncing off of. And sensation does that. It moves us into the physiology of the body and starts to engage us with the natural processing ability of the body to move us into this moment.
And again, this is what the things that are, they're not socially reinforced, they're not culturally highlighted. In some circles, they're actually sort of vilified, like, why are you being so sensitive, you know? And it's funny because the more attention you give those things, the less distracting they become. It's almost like an inverse relationship, because they become, as you say, as resources that can ground you when circumstances make you anxious, or you're distracted and you're multitasking, you're doing those things. If you just take that little bit of a sort of a step back and say, well, okay, all this is going on, but my foot is pretty much stable on the ground here. My butt is pretty stable in the chair here. Those are self-soothing ways of sort of processing, where you don't have to think. One of the things about somatics is that it lets thought become much more fluid. Instead of being more of a separation, where the mind is basically operating as the puppeteer and the body is animating what the mind is delivering to it, the mind and the body become sort of interspersed, and you become more involved in the experience. The example I gave yesterday in the talk was, when you get to the movie theater, before the movie starts, you're chattering and things like that, and you're watching the previews and sort of half in, half out of the event. But at a certain point, the music swells, the darkness comes over you, and you sort of forget you're in the chair, and you move all of your attention to the story of the movie. It's just lights flickering on the wall over there, but you've created meaning for it. Anywhere you create meaning and you're engaged, you're having an experience. So by being able to do that and at the same time keep awareness of the chair, things get deeper and things get more settled and things get more organized, so that you become more coherent, you become more self-aware of how you are as a human being processing things. And if you have that, you're going to share more a truth from yourself, and you're also going to gain more truth from the environment, and not that distorted funhouse mirror that most of us live in, where the belief system is filtering things for us and sort of homogenizing our experiences from, I'm familiar with this, I recognize that, oh, that's new over there. And getting out of that rhythm and having a raw, sort of open attention that we very rarely experience out there is something that somatics cultivates. And in your work, I'm sure you've seen it shift yourself as a person, where some people get into a peak state when they're doing something that they're aesthetically enjoying, whether it's, you know, gardening, whatever. And then when they're doing something they hate, they forget that peak state is physiologically still there. They just put it back on the shelf. So how do you use the somatic experience you have delivering care in everyday life? Like, give me an example. How do you handle the distractions that weigh everybody down by pulling up this resource in that context?
Well, let me give you a very right on the moment example. I remember years ago I was doing an interview with Ron Kurtz, who's the originator of Haukomi Bodywork and psychotherapy method. And so here I was on the phone with him one morning and went started to go into my interview, and I realized that I was starting to hear water. And I finally said to him, Ron, like, where are you? And he said, oh, I'm sitting in the bath. Well, in this moment, as we talk, you know, I've gone down into a quiet room. I've got a yoga mat out. I've got myself lying on my back with my feet against the wall. I want to get as grounded as possible because I know once I get on the phone into cyberspace, into the world of ideas, it's the easiest possible place to lose my sense of where I am in this moment in my body.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to get as much support as possible for that as I can moves me out of that place that, that Alexander Lowen of bioenergetic psychotherapy used to call a schizoid split, where as you diminish information that becomes available in your body, your brain has to use the sensory information that is present there in its memory banks, and it starts chewing around and around on less and less information and gets paranoid because it doesn't know that it knows that it doesn't have everything it needs, and starts to go faster and faster. And that the moment we can start to get more sensory information in, that calming, soothing effect that you had starts to get there. So that when I'm working with people, whether it's teaching practitioners or working with clients, we're running a somatic patterning class, a noon hour class for clients right now, and it's one of the things that I'm constantly saying to them is slow down your movement so that you can actually feel what the sensations are in that movement.
You had a phrase on your blog about that. Was basically, we get so habitual in the way we move, we're not really present in our movements. So if someone says, raise your arm, people do it, and they're not in their arm. They're in their head raising their arm. And then you say, well, raise it like it wants to be raised. And now you're going from the arm back to the body, and the arm is teaching the brain how it likes to be moved. And it's that sort of bilocation of your attention that you're cultivating so that instead of splitting, like you say, and we talk about in our work, it's Barreau's term, ditension, having a split attention instead of cotension, having a coupled attention. When you're doing ordinary activities, because you do things out of habit all the time, and the thing is that if you can sort of develop a little way to drop down out of that menu and say, no, I'm going to switch the orientation here, and I'm going to let the arm move the way it wants to move, and then you become a witness within your body of your arm's movement. And at that point, there's that sensory motor coupling and that re-education, rewiring, all the remodeling, all the fun physiology goes on. But the felt sense awareness is, whoa. It's that, you know, Keanu Reeves' experience. It's like, I didn't know all that was going on. It's telekinesis at that point, you know. Like, this arm is moving, and it's moving the way it wants to move. And that's what somatics is. You're transferring from that gross motor, sort of like automatic, kind of almost rudimentary pattern, all the way out to fine motor, and you're retaining attention the entire spectrum, so you're not losing touch with what's being experienced. And that most people get into sort of kind of the cliff notes of their activity during the day, and they take the approach of like trimming the hedges. They just kind of pay attention to whatever sticks out instead of everything that's sticking in and sticking together. And that's one of the things, like I said, I want to get more into how you do your somatic patterning class, because you integrate a bunch of different pioneers in somatics and how you've been able to sort of put that together into a process where people can move through and sort of stand on the shoulders of some somatic giants and actually walk away in a relatively short period of time with a great set of resources. So why don't we just take a side street into that now. Somatic patterning is what for the people listening?
Well, you know, first of all, I just want to say that I know we've got a limited amount of time here, and so I'm going to try to pick things that fit.
We got time. We got plenty of time.
Time we have. So, because one of the things I want to say is that we have our in-house at the clinic, our in-house training program called the Soma Lab. It's a new chapter, something I've been doing for a number of years with different groups. And then we have our client somatic patterning class, which is really just a generic name. And you know, there are other people who have done some very good work with using the same name. But in this case, it's a great name to help people capture the idea that not only do you get sensation that helps your body reorganize, the more sensation you have, the better it reorganizes, but it reorganizes into self balancing patterns. And so one of the major streams in that client-centered noon hour class that, that I'm doing is I take a lot of the influences that come out of Gerda Alexander and Charlotte Selver's American work, which Charlotte Selver ended up calling in the U.S. Sensory awareness, and paying attention to the sensation part, but then bringing in a lot of ideas that come from people like Kelvin Kreis and in particular Thomas Hanna, of looking at the distillation of what some of the basic developmental patterns are in the body, arching patterns, curling patterns, contralateral patterns, like the cross-crawl kind of things. But instead of doing them as a technique, you know, do these five times and you'll start to feel better, instead what we do is we slow down and start to explore them. And I lead people through saying, for example, as you lie on your back, see what happens if your knees are bent and your feet are flat on the floor, if you just start to imagine releasing the pressure of your feet on the floor. And watch what your lower back does when you do that. And just start to notice where do you tense unnecessarily when you do that? Where are you trying harder than you need to? How, as you said before, how does it want to go? How would the movement actually want to happen? So you open up the possibility of starting to join with that particular pattern. Now, when we take this into everyday life, eventually, for example, a diagonal pattern where a person might be exploring pushing one shoulder and the opposite hip into the floor, so left shoulder, right hip, for example, then comes something that they can play with when they're driving and they want to do a shoulder check. And so what happens if I start to do that shoulder check? Well, normally my body just rolls over to the left and as my head turns and my head gets into a glitch. But what happens if I start to lead a little bit with that shoulder into the seat back? What happens if I play with the idea of the right thigh just sliding back so my right buttock moves in? And you'll notice, by golly, that my head turns a little easier and the whole body starts to maybe open up and breathe a bit. So in joining, in exploring the foundation pieces, you then start to be able to notice where they serve you better in everyday motion, standing in line at the bank, driving your car, drinking your coffee in the morning.
Yeah, like the things we take for granted. Like I said, there's so many idle moments where we're basically kind of zoning out, and these are moments where there's no conflict, where there's no overwhelming alarm from the outside world. The inner world is sitting there waiting for you to pay attention to it, but the only time we seem to go within is when we're in a crisis or when we're bored, anxiety or boredom. Then we go within and start going, okay, I got to kind of steer the boat here for a minute. Otherwise, we're sort of just going along for the ride and we're on automatic pilot, and we're losing opportunity at that point. And you're saying, like I said at the beginning of the show too, what somatics is very ordinary stuff transformed into extraordinary stuff by merely shifting your attention. That's all it involves. And then everything else opens up from there. And when you're able to do that consistently and develop a skill set for it and develop sort of a modality to go into that awareness, it becomes transformational at that point. Then you're doing the work you're talking about here in somatic patterning, where you're actually using that attention as a sort of a divining rod as a way to really affect behavior and affect the way that you experience life at that point. Then, so give me a little bit more about what's going on at the Healing Connections in terms of what your program is and what you're trying to achieve from people in the program.
Well, the program itself is part of an ongoing workshopping of the development of somatics principles that I've been doing for a good number of years. I started well over about 13, 14 years ago with what I called a somatic studies program, where I invited a bunch of practitioners to work with me a long weekend once a month over 2 years, and we slowly went through a lot of different kinds of somatic practices, looked at, for example, what Ida Rolfe had to say about Rolfing, what Moshe Feldman Grace had to say about Feldman. The first year was more body-centered hands-on and movement approaches. The second year we looked at somatic psychology approaches. And each time we learned something and tried to understand what it was that they were doing and looked for the underlying principles, then I'd send people home and say, okay, take these ideas into your practice. Most of them were massage therapists at that time, and see what you learned from it. And out of that, we slowly did like this big experiential lit review that helped me distill a lot of the basic ideas that we're talking about now. Now, in this version of the Soma Lab, where we have a quite an eclectic body-centered therapy clinic, we have people who are Reiki practitioners, a number of yoga practitioners, cranial sacral work and lymphatic work and massage and on and on, like that. And so on the surface of it, you would say, well, how are these people going to learn how to work together? But what the somatics principles do, paying attention to sensation, watching how the body wants to respond to that, all the things we're talking about, is that it starts to provide a common language for the practitioners in the clinic. And out of that, not only do we start to have some sense of congruency between our different practices, but we start to have a better sense of where we might be able to cross-refer between each other, or to even take that further, to do some of the things where we're just developing the last year here, where practitioners are actually working together, doing tandem or even more practitioners doing sessions with an individual client, something which to this point has often only been limited in, for example, advanced cranial sacral therapies or that kind of thing, where you have several people working together. In our clinic, we're having people with different modalities starting to understand how an acupuncturist can work with a cranial sacral practitioner, with a Reiki practitioner, on somebody who's had some very extreme car accident injuries, for example, and start to understand by working with the basic principles and looking how the patterns are moving through the body to have that common language that moves towards an enhanced treatment result.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've talked a lot about it as if everybody understands what somatics consists of, and if in case you join us late, we're working here tonight with as I can... My screen just went screensaver. Matthew van der Giezen, if I say it all fluidly, it sounds okay. We're really trying to get at the heart of the upside of this discipline. So just as a way to kind of get people engaged, because we're going to see if anyone wants to, we have some callers or some listeners actually hanging out live with us. So if anyone wants to call the show and ask Matthew a question, by all means, it's 646-478-4847. And just as a way to kind of... almost take the last half hour that we've been talking and then just kind of ping it and restart it, we've pretty much defined what somatics is. It's this relationship, inner and outer world, self and surroundings, dynamically opening itself up, all the sensory motor stuff we mentioned, all the things that we talked about with awareness. But what is somatics for? What is somatics good for? We had, I think it was about a month ago now, we had Martha Eddy on talking about it, that the way people usually come in contact with somatics is through suffering. And it's like, you know, because it is a discipline. It is something that's self-directed. So how would you kind of get people who maybe have never heard of somatics, or if they heard about it, you know, in passing, how would you give them an answer to that question? What is somatics for? What is it good
for?
Well,
I'm going to start coming in from the general. Somatics is good for everything. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples of what I mean by that. You probably noticed on my blog just recently, I was referring to some of the work of Richard Strozzi-Heckler, who is a psychologist and a keto master who's done some amazing stuff with his institute on taking somatics principles into corporate or organizational culture. Worked with the U.S. military, has worked with big companies like Capital One, street gangs, just whoever needs to start to understand how these principles can help them operate in a community more congruently by learning how to drop into your body. Some of the things we've been talking about, pay attention to sensation. I've had a client a number of years ago now who was a manager of a sales team who introduced touch as part of the monthly team building. The groups would switch around and work together in different teams. They'd take a day or so to do team building. She suggests that they try touch. The groups that used a little bit of simple shoulder massage as their team building at the beginning of the month rapidly became the top sellers compared to the teams that didn't utilize this. when she used some of the ideas we talked about feeling the chair, getting your feet on the floor, she did performance reviews. Mm-hmm. The performance reviews were more successful. There's mm-hmm. no place that bringing these ideas does not work. What doesn't work is using it as an intellectual exercise or putting directives into it. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, for example, on the directive side, you'll notice that whenever I'm describing one of these ideas or the application of it, I'm using a question. So all of us have been in classes, you know, yoga classes or any kind of body awareness class, relaxation exercise classes, where we're told a direction around breathing, for example. Breathe, you know, bigger, or breathe to this part of your body. A somatics approach would say, and everybody who's listening, you might just play with this for a second, might say, what would happen if you dropped your breath to the end, to the bottom of your breath, and sat and waited for the urge to breathe in again to come, as if you were a surfer waiting for the wave to come? What kind of breath would that be? Now, research tells us we know what kind of breath that would be. The eukapnic breathing research says that it'll be a bigger breath than one that you would try to make just trying to take a big breath, mm-hmm. because you go with the natural impulse to breathe, rejoining with the breath pattern. But rather than tell people that this is what they're looking for, we give them the space to explore. And it does this tremendous thing of getting people out of the resistance to one more thing I have to do, and leading them into relationship through curiosity. So the person who comes into somatics through suffering is actually allowing themselves to be affected in the relationship. And the more we allow sensation to affect us so that we're moved to response to how does it want to be, the more the somatics principles have their best chance of working. And so that's the where it doesn't work is when you sit and try to say, well, now I'm just going to watch, without letting yourself be affected. Where it does work is any place where you want to take the question and the curiosity about how sensation is going to awaken reorganization in your being and move you towards more congruent response from your being to your environment and to others in your environment.
Well, that's a great answer, because I was just talking about this yesterday with clinicians who are used to working in that action potential, you know, sort of herky-jerky world where there is no interiority, there is no subjectivity, there is no release point, there's just simply function. And when you get into even something as simple as the breathing cycle, I always try to emphasize, you know, most of the practices you learn are going to emphasize inhalation, exhalation. They don't emphasize the impulse to breathe in and the impulse to breathe out. If you hang out there, the other two take care of themselves. And when you don't, you're sort of missing a coupling aspect of it. So what happens is that you could train a dog like that, but you can't live in that state. You're going to go back to your habit. And the habit always has an intelligence to it. Like you're saying, respecting that intelligence and having sort of a curiosity or a fascination with it sometimes. Even when you're not feeling good, even when you're totally, and your head is totally full of mud and you're depressed or you're angry or you're sad or any emotion that's coming over you, let yourself experience that the dark side of the wave, so to speak, because what comes next is release, and then what comes next is more of a reintegration. So it's like you can survive a rainstorm, you can survive the blues and not try to suppress it or try to push it away or try to control it, which is really the cultural directive, if you were, to try to control emotions and control your belief system and sort of override it. And this is a way to sort of let biology be your guide, so to speak, and sort of respect, respect, for the first time, how rich and how supportive this awareness can be when you do not try to control it. And I always say to people, there's two fears. One is losing control, and the other one is realizing you never had it in the first place. So, that was a great answer for that question, because it's one of those ones that, why hasn't somatics as a discipline, got out of the back of the room? Why isn't that leading other professions? Why isn't the paradigm becoming more pervasive, like yoga or Pilates, other disciplines were? And the answer you gave in the beginning there was sort of telling. It's because it's good for everything. It has that tofu quality to it. Wherever you put it next to, it seems to enhance. It's almost like one of those lamps in the I keep thinking of like if you go into a greenhouse, you know, it facilitates. I don't know if Somatics as a community, and you mentioned Strozzi, a couple other leaders. There's only a handful of people in Somatics that I'm aware of. You could probably rattle off more names than me that would be even remotely household names. Thomas Hanna, the father of the whole thing in the 60s and 70s and then 80s, I guess, he's sort of one guy that people may have heard of. You've mentioned Feldenkrais and Elsa Gindler, sensory integration people, things like that. But do you know any Somatic leader who has sort of taken it upon himself to make the community more of a cohesive unit or more of an organized thing? Or is it applying the Somatic principle to the Somatic discipline and saying, no, we don't have to do that, the rhythm does it on its own? I just kind of feel like we're almost like, as a group, just a little too laid back to go into this sort of marketing campaign, like everyone must do Somatics, that kind of a thing.
Well, you know, I think one of the people who I have the most respect for has been quite a mentor to me is Don Hanlon-Johnson at the Somatic, mm-hmm. The California Institute of Integral Studies. He's certainly done as much or more than anybody else in this field as a writer and as a thinker, mm-hmm. and also as an activist in gathering together representatives of many different somatic practices. For a number of years at the Esalen Institute, and, mm-hmm. and getting together with other academics and healthcare professionals from mainstream healthcare to get those kinds of conversations going, and it just done some fabulous work. And if you go to, for example, his website, donhanlonjohnson.com, where you can see the list of his books and his bibliography and the list of many of the connections of people he's drawn from, it's a good place to get that kind of connection from. But as far as, you know, taking Somatics to the street, I think it's part of the fate of Somatics as a principle, as a way of looking at things, that it won't ever truly come to the forefront, because its function is to look at the functionality of everything. So, for example, when people on the East Coast went around in women in finishing schools in, you know, the 40s and 50s and even into the 60s with books on their head, and I grew up thinking, oh, you know, this was like to make them stand taller, which is partly true. In actual fact, the person who introduced those ideas into East Coast finishing schools was someone who had to leave Europe during the war, one of the students of Elsa Gindler, of the gymnastics movement, who brought some of those ideas about what happens if you place an object on top of your head while your spinal column starts to organize towards that. It starts mm-hmm. to lengthen. It's quite an amazing thing. Or when Charlotte
and in case
Snell
you're keeping score at home, he's talking about Charlotte Silver. I know her pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. If Charlotte Selber brings her ideas to New York, around the time of the Second World War, one of the people who studied with her is Fritz Perls, and the whole kind of, you know, Gestalt movement and the mm-hmm. body centeredness of it was heavily influenced by her input, but nobody knows that because it got so wonderfully absorbed. It's not like it's a separate thing. It infuses the work with life, and I think that's the value of the work, is that when it works, it infuses what people are doing with life, and then we've done our work. You know?
Yeah, it's very strange. We're sort of like the wind that blows the seeds. It's very strange. Almost every Somatic innovator, with the exception of very few, we mentioned a couple of them. Get the accolades or get the enough of the spotlight, because we're sort of pointing out something, as Feldenkrais would call it, as the elusive obvious. This is something that not everybody really has the patience for, because it is something that is hidden in there, is embedded in there. But it's also like I said before, it brings up things that people spend a lot of money and a lot of time, and we had Professor Val on the show, in therapy, trying to push down and away, whether they're panic attacks, whether they're psychosomatic reactions, whether they're memory, with, you know, all these things. Like I deal a lot with children dealing with nightmares and things like that. These are all aspects of somatics that when you give people a resource like you just did before, talking about being able to sort of guide yourself through things without having to take specific direction, just letting the rhythm do it for you. It always lends itself more to an art form than it does to a philosophy or a science. Yet, it's a first-person science. There's no reproducibility. There's no proving anything. There's no double-blind studies on it. You know, it isn't trying to contest anything in the third-person science world. It simply is. And that's why it's more of an inquiry. It's more of a reflective science and a process than it is anything else. And that's why, you know, the second question I wanted to get to with you is as you've been doing this and transitioning people and the practitioners from the paradigm of mind or body to mind and body and then beyond mind and body into just pure soma, what's the biggest insight you found in terms of individuals and feedback? What have people told you how it's really shifted their worldview or shifted the way that they experience life?
Well, I think that the shifting the worldview is the greatest insight piece of it. And I just want to come, I'm hesitating because I want to come at this from two ends of it. One is that I've learned over the years to have a great appreciation for the little things. It's often in those just little shifts, like the little moment you spend with somebody, the something that was said that even that person might not remember, that makes a huge change for you, that's often where the crux of something happens. And so when I'm working with somebody, and in my case, you know, doing primarily hands-on work in a table, what I'm constantly looking for, listening for, is where is the unheard story? Where is that little subtle shift that the tissues want to make, that if I can just be present to it, then something new will happen. And that most profound things happen often out of those little pieces. And so I think that's one of the wonderful things for me, is that on one side, the difficulty of entering into this work is that it requires a person to be present.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like present in, you know, like here I am present, I'm showed up, but present to. So to be present to something, to be present to how my hand is on my cup of coffee as I'm going to lift it from the table and put it to my mouth. If I send people home with that exercise, I've been surprised at the numbers of times people will come back after a week of trying one simple thing for 5 minutes in the morning, like watching how what their experience is of their cup of coffee be coming to their mouth, and will say, one of the first things I noticed was annoyance. I got so irritated. Right? Because our
whole
is about checking out and not paying attention. And it disrupts that system. So it is actually a considerable barrier to get over, and that's why introducing lots of different ideas, working with curiosity, and engaging with people where they have an interest in learning. I've got a lower back problem, or whatever it happens to be, is the place where they're going to have the most impulse, most interest in actually starting to work with the idea of being present. But the thing that I think then comes after paying attention to the little things is that what this work does is it changes relationship. There's this old rabbinical story, you know, that back in the old days they'd have one of these old rabbis in a little training center and a whole bunch of students. And one day they were watching this guy who, you know, was very sage and everybody was a little bit afraid of him. And he turned this page in the book. And by the end of the day, he hadn't moved. And by the end of the next day, he hadn't turned the page. And they started talking to each other and eventually sent one guy up to the front to say, I'm sorry, Rabbi, like, what happened? Like, it's gone wrong. Like, you got stuck. And he looked up and said, this is so sweet. How can I go anywhere else? Everything is right here. Well, when I have this little story of a link in my blog to one of my experiences, in this case working with a knee clicking problem and going upstairs, And I'm still, it's a practice. I'll continue to work with that because what started with an issue with my knee has now shown me a whole way in which I've moved incongruently going up the stairs. My impatience at stopping on the stairs and dropping into this little thing has now started to change my whole way of being with myself and with my knee in how I go up the stairs. It softened me. And that shifting of the relationship means that we get affected, we get changed on how we interact with the world because we let ourselves be affected by our engagement. And I'll just add one last piece about this.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, if we come back to Charlotte Salver, who, you know, is a tremendous resource, which is why we refer to her so often, that one of the things that she spoke of from her teacher, Elsa Gindler, who she first learned from in Germany, who taught people right through the war, and there's one person of her students who talks about, who stayed there during the war, who talks about walking through her neighborhood with hydrants broken and bricks all over the place and people totally freaked out, and how she still was working at paying attention to her sensations in the moment, and how that carried her through such horrible situations. Now, Charlotte Salver says, this work, in the end, is not about sitting in a classroom and working at how what happens if you touch a flower. It's about taking it to what happens when you open the newspaper. And now what are you going to do? You see what's on that page.
Matthew, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. There's a journal called The Journal of Mundane Behavior. It's a peer-reviewed journal. You haven't heard of this journal? A fascinating journal. Is it the Journal of Mundane Behavior? And the guy does nothing but somatic experiments that involve, like, mailing a letter. And he writes, like, a five-page paper of all the sensations and all the social roles he changes. You know, he's sitting at his desk, and he's just, you know, he's interfacing with the Internet. And then he's a pedestrian, and then all the affect changes he goes through as he buys his gum or whatever. Fascinating stuff. And I was talking about this again yesterday with some clinicians, and I was like, you know, you take out your iPod and you look at the way this thing is programmed and very digital, and the buttons that we tend to push in life are always going to be stop, fast forward, and rewind. Those are the three. We want to stop things and control them, and we want to go faster to get where we want to go when we're frustrated, when life is giving us obstacles, or we want to go back and relive some part of the past that seems better in the moment. Somatic says pause, play, and record, which is basically to pay attention, remember, and integrate, and make things and give things meaning, and by shifting your attention from those buttons that we would normally push to the ones we normally don't, we take for granted, is exactly what you were just suggesting, exactly what Elsa Gindler's always suggested, and some of the other masters you mentioned tonight, and I just think it's one of those things where it's an experience worth having, because I talk about entrainment a lot, which is the physiological process of integration that we're getting to here. And I always think people are most open to being entrained when they're doing something fun, when they're doing something that their guard is down. You talked about before the multitasking. So there's a perception outside somatics that inside somatics, everything's happening in slow motion. And I was out in Denver a couple weeks ago, going about 85 miles an hour with Leonard Skinner on the radio, the mountains to my left, wide open highway in front of me, and I was somasizing like an SOB, because you can have that gleeful experience, that high in somatics, that you can't have cognitively, because cognitively you're sort of coloring the experience toward preferences and towards things, and your mind is overriding it. When you let that go, and you, like you said before, you don't push into the experience. You don't grab with your eyes, as the sensors tell me all the time. You let things come to you. You get more out of it because there's less effort. It's almost like the wind is at your back and the sails are full of gusto, and there's not that sense of fatigue afterwards, where when you're doing, I'll just call them mind-body exercises and things like that, where you have to remember them and learn them. And they're too upstairs. They're too frontal lobe for me, and people give them up. Like, we have our simple exercise is called Simples, which aptly named, that really involves moving your eyes in a figure eight at a T and taking a breath in between and doing it open and closed, and then just noting how that experiment affects your perception. And people get massive physiological shifts by doing something that they do all the time, but doing it with a sense of meaning. And like you said before, curiosity. So I guess to kind of wrap things up here, the Rangers have put away the Caps, by the way. They hung on for the 4-3 win. And I'm moving on to the St. Louis-Vancouver game now. What would you suggest people do that are not going to go to a somatic practitioner like yourself or like myself and actually get tutored in this process? How can they give them like three resources, maybe a book or maybe something that they can get like a handle on this to say, you know, what is this thing called somatics? I'm tired of not knowing. I'm curious enough. You've pushed me over the edge. No, I must know something about this. Where would be step one for the couch potato or the adrenaline junkie that's listening to say, I would really like to experience this? That doesn't involve going to us. You still there? Uh-oh. Yep, he's still there. Matthew? Great.
Hello, you still there?
I'm still here. Are you here?
Yeah, I plug pulled on me. My apologies.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, that I was trying to reply. I was waiting. I was trying to.
I know you raised it to a great height, and then just at that moment, where was he?
and I had to go. Okay, that's it. Let it go. He'll come back. I had to reply everything I just said. So what would be step one? If someone's sitting here who happened across the show and they say, okay, I want to go out tomorrow and I want to begin my somatic experience. What would be step one for these guys? Give them like a couple of resources they could do to get the ball rolling.
Okay, well, the first thing I'd say is we're all on the internet, so go and check out Don Hanlon Johnson's site. It's a great resource as far as finding a lot of the different people that we've been talking about tonight and getting yourselves a whole bunch of related reading around that. It's a lovely place to start. The other thing that unhooked me was I was just trying to turn to my computer here, which meant I had to get up off the floor, but I'll just have to survive without that at the moment. And go to and the website I'm trying to find here right now is emspress.com, because there's a wonderful book called Somatic Patterning is by Marianne Foster. And she actually teaches in one of those massage schools that you were talking about in Boulder, and she gives you a lot of different little exercises and a lot of the background and historical development of this work, and I think she's just done some tremendous work around that. As you know, the amount of books that are out there, the stuff that we're talking about is scattered within them, and sometimes can be very difficult to find. But in those are two of the places where you could at least get some of the information together. And the final thing that I direct people to is sensoryawareness.org, which is Charlotte Selver, of course, is now dead, but she lived until I think it was 101 and got married 2 years before she died and was just full of life to the very end. And the people who are carrying on her work at sensoryawareness.org are doing fantastic stuff. And so you can get a link to a lot of tapes of her work and writings of people around her work, a wonderful resource for that. And, of course, the last thing I'm going to mention is you go to my blog,
go to Soma Labs,
which got a link to there, and I will just continue to put up links to different people's work, put them in context, and give people some kind of idea of where the different paths that have developed around this network together and form one congruent whole.
Well, like I said, I know our role is to be sort of the supporting player in this play called life, but sometimes us character actors, us Soma Sapes, can steal a couple of scenes, and I wish you luck with your work, because I really feel like you're on the right wavelength with it, and you have the right spirit behind it, and that always seems to carry the day with this kind of stuff, because the Soma is like, it's almost like a bar of soap. The more you try to grab at it and try to use it, it's almost like the Covenant of the Ark in Raiders. You know, it's like you have to have the mindset of the carpenter. You have chosen wisely, the thing. So it's like it's got a little zen to it, and it humbles me on a daily basis. You were talking about it in your email the other day that every day you get up and you start over again. There's no point in your somatic journey where you become a master of it. It'll humble you if you've been doing it for 30 years. If you're Charlotte Silver, it'll humble you. When she was alive, she was always apt to say, you know, only this moment, only this moment. And being able to retain that awareness when you're being pushed and pulled out of that moment is really the secret and the sauce. So I wish you luck with that. And again, you guys that listened this long, you can hop over to Matthew's site at SomaLab.blogspot.com or healing-connections.ca. You can check that out. It's also on the Blog Talk server and on the blog we love, blogsoma.net. There's a lot of resources up there for you as well on our website, somaspace.org. So there's a lot of Soma there. So just in closing, I always ask this question at the end because sometimes people just go all the way to the end just to hear the answer. So the archivers, you guys are here with us now. You missed the whole interview, but you're going to get the juice right here. What is the number one misconception about your work that you'd like to clear up now and for the entire Blog Talk Radio audience?
Oh, I think we've covered it all, actually. There wouldn't be a single other thing that I'd want to add in. I think,
wow.
You know,
passes on it. Okay.
Yeah, I'd say we've yacked it out and put a beautiful package on it. And I just want to say, actually, that I think you're doing fantastic work here. It's part of the networking thing, and the more of us that are doing this kind of thing, the more we're actually serving the process of getting this stuff cross-pollinated. So, you know, thank you, and to Val, who very quietly and obviously efficiently makes things happen in the background.
Yeah, she was, believe me, she was the fireman tonight, because I was locked out of Internet Explorer, and I couldn't get on my own show. So it was a little moment of somatic panic before the show starts, but it was okay. Well, thanks for joining us tonight here on Somatime, and hopefully we can continue the dialogue on the web, and maybe I'll get my way out to Canada. I'll meet you in Denver somewhere down the line, where we kind of tend to congregate a couple times a year, and we can, kind of pool our experiences together and keep this wave going.
Yeah, well, if you come to Edmonton, we can go and watch the Oilers lose for once.
Well, hey, I'm up for that. I'm going to go see the old Gretzky Cups.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot for joining us. Take care. Bye now. Okay. Wow. We got through the hour sent her camel to sleep, and just wanted to play a little. I spent some time putting it. I just want to see. This is me coughing a couple weeks ago on the air. Just want to see how this came out.
All right, that's it. He's fired.
Yeah.
Can I talk to you, Val?
No,
yeah,
okay. Please.
I'm back. Oh yeah, that'll be used again. Oh, yeah. Let me see if I have my sister being on the air. I don't know if I got to that before. No, I have to play it from here. Let's see. Well, I don't know if I'm going to even bother. Nah, we'll do it next week when I'm ready. If you were listening a couple weeks ago when I had Dr. Levin on, my erstwhile Philo sister bopped on the air there at the end. So it was interesting. Oh, we'll play some... some Calamity Jane in lieu of that. See if she's coming.
Every day takes figuring out all over again how to fucking live.
There you go. That sums it up. So, again, I'm going to stick with my theme of a song for the week. We didn't get to it in the beginning because the Rangers won their game. And that's something that... More than the cockles of my soma, if you can do that on Blog Talk Radio. But I will share with you a little ditty kind of brought back some memories yesterday that I think will be toe-tapping fun to close out the show. Next week, we'll be joined by one Frank Mosca. Oh, who's a Frank Mosca? Well, you're going to know, because Frank is an author of several books, Joy Words and God Speak and a couple other ones, and his work deals with bliss. And how we're built for bliss. It's beyond positive psychology, beyond the option method, beyond anything you've really ever heard. This guy's a fabulous speaker. He's a mercurial man himself, and he's had a very eclectic life. He even was in the CIA. So I'll leave it there. But first, a little dance music there, Maestro, to play us out as the Napster cranks itself into awareness here. And... good hour. We had a good hour
tonight, bopping back and forth there with Matthew, and hopefully you got something out of it, because, like I said, he's doing really great work in Canada with this, and he really spelled it out to me, some of the frustrations I've had bringing somatics to the mainstream, or just to the fringe of the mainstream either, is that it has its own agenda to be sort of the background that gives things depth rather than the foreground that gives things intensity. So let's see if we can get a little funkophilia here for you to play us out tonight as we dance our way into game two on Saturday afternoon. From the album, The Hits, from 78 to whatever, I give you Prince and a little retrograde funk tonight. 10 years since my JVSR paper hit the street. You can check it out on JVSR.com. Just Google Filippi and read what you got there. This is Soma 1 to Soma 2. Wishing you nothing but light. See you next week. Only the Canadians. Chiropractors. Happy Tax Day, everybody. We'll see you next week. Life is just a party.